Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Hello and welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio, where we work together to connect the dots between politics and finance, a need for better education, humanity and world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and desire for equality of opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world, and most of all, embracing creativity and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Please welcome my guest today, Sarah Lawson, the Executive Director of the Piedmont Council for the Arts. Sarah, how are you?
Wonderful. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Welcome. And by the way, let's just start right. How long have you been in Charlottesville?
Great question. I've actually been in Charlottesville since 2002, so I suppose that makes it 12 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, it is. The time has flown by. It's been a wonderful place to live for these past 12 years.
It really has. You've actually been here longer than I have. So now you are the, I guess we can still say new, comparatively speaking, Executive Director of the Piedmont Council for the Arts.
Yes.
You're known as PCA, I know. You do professional development, and of course you advocate for the arts. You coordinate and promote arts, the arts community. Is that primarily Charlottesville, Albemarle County, or where?
Yeah, so our services are mostly focused on Charlottesville and Albemarle with outreach to the surrounding counties and then a wide variety of resources available online that are accessible to anyone anywhere in the world. But most of our focus is indeed on Charlottesville and Albemarle residents, and those are the populations that we do our best to track our impact on and really be responsive to the needs and the interests of those residents.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear the organization is doing this. It's Create Charlottesville Albemarle Cultural Plan.
Yeah, so in addition to the professional development and the networking and other resources that you mentioned, PCA has been working for the past couple of years to figure out ways to support the arts community in Charlottesville and Albemarle more effectively on funding and other issues that are more infrastructurally related.
Mm-hmm.
So the Create Charlottesville Albemarle Cultural Plan that we just finished in 2013 is reflective of those interests and those desires. And so it's basically a strategic plan for the arts community and for the community overall, and outlines six different goal areas that need more attention or more recognition of what's going on. So everything from arts education to cultural tourism to livability for artists, just basically areas that really could use some extra support both from the city and county government but also from local residents and citizens who can impact the arts community positively.
Gotcha. That's an impressive list. Let's touch on a couple. I don't know that everyone knows what creative placemaking is.
Yeah, so creative placemaking is one of my personal favorites, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the easiest way to describe it is public art. And so it can mean everything from the art-in-place sculptures that exist in Charlottesville to the Charlottesville Mural Project, but also it can be much, much more ephemeral and much more related to projects that define Charlottesville and Albemarle as, you know, a place as opposed to just a city and a county. It really, it's any kind of artistic project that gives some kind of awareness to our area as a creative and arts mecca, almost,
mm-hmm.
both within the state, the entire East Coast, and hopefully one day within the entire country. We see this is a really thriving region with lots of creative people, and creative placemaking really acts on that to actually make the city and the county reflect that creativity to anyone who comes. So making sure that there are sculptures everywhere, making sure that there are outdoor concerts and creative uses of space and garden areas, and just a welcoming environment that reflects our interest in the arts is essentially what that goal is all about. There are a variety of really interesting strategies under that. Everything from, programming Shakespeare in the Park to making sure that there are free concerts in the pavilion downtown in Charlottesville, and just a lot of really interesting ideas that all came from public feedback. And that's actually one thing that I neglected to mention, but the cultural plan was created with the input of more than 1,000 local residents.
Wow.
And so PCA worked to coordinate all of that feedback and distill it down into the document that we have now. But it was almost 9 months of planning and discussions, lots of focus groups and interviews with community members, and just a wealth of ideas and information came out of it.
And this sort of has been going on at least since 2012, right? The preliminary planning and then moving forward through 2013 and still going strong. You were just involved with, that's putting it mildly, I guess, Give for Good?
Yeah, we did indeed participate in Give for Good, which was a really fun experiment. It's exciting to see groups like the Community Foundation and the Center for Nonprofit Excellence work together to try to benefit the entire nonprofit community, and I think a lot of people had fun with it. It was, friendly competition,
yes.
And it benefited a lot of different organizations. They more than doubled their goal overall in terms of the giving in our community, so it was quite impressive.
I know I was impressed. I do, in addition to hosting a show, I do radio news, and just reporting on the facts and figures as well as the events and the impact it had on the community, I was most impressed. So I have to tell you, hat off to everyone involved with it. It was an amazing, amazing achievement. And it was just the first year, yes?
Exactly, yeah. It was just the first year, and it was just kind of a try and see. And I think that they blew it out of the water, and it went far beyond anyone's expectations of how successful it could be. So hopefully they'll be able to do it again.
You know what I'm loving most about this, if I may? I am an artist in the sense of TV, film, and theater, but I love history, and I've always loved history. And I worked and lived in Manhattan for a quarter of a century, I guess. But whenever I really wanted to get away, if I had time, I mean, we'd go out to the Hamptons and Shelter Island and all that for a weekend, but if we had time, I would just rent a car, New Yorker, I'd rent a car and drive to Charlottesville. And I did so because of the obvious historical attraction, loving history as I do. But what I'm loving about what you and PCA are doing, and others, is that we're defining Charlottesville and Albemarle County as important as it is as a historical contribution to the nation, that's fair to say. But we are more than old history. We are new history, too. We are making new history. And as you say, it's a center, a destination point, if you will, of artists. I mean, every time I meet someone here, they're involved in the arts in one way or another, very creative people. There's the Tom Tom Founders Festival, and anyway, I'm going on and on, but I just, the more I listen to you, the more I say, this really is now. I wasn't certain of it when I arrived, but I think now part of Charlottesville, Albemarle County's definition, in addition to the wonderful wealth of history, is our culture here, our education, our curiosity, creativity, and the arts that come with that. Will you accept that as something you are accomplishing?
Absolutely. I think that it is something that has been accomplished over many decades at this point, and
sure,
through the hard fought battles of many individuals in our community. But I do think that it is reaping its rewards now. I think that we see Charlottesville popping up on lists of top places to aspire to and top places to live, high quality of life, and a lot of that is related to just great cultural resources and the intermingling of history with current innovative art projects, but also with, great architecture and design that facilitates public involvement. I mean, having the pedestrian mall is a huge coup for us, and it enables so many public arts events and a great cultural sense of place that we're really lucky to have a lot of those fundamental developments that have already been installed and kind of become part of our culture here, and it helps. But we try to do as much as we can to further augment all of that.
Now, you called it a pedestrian mall. Now, that makes sense. I know that. But tell us, I know what you're talking about, but tell the folks listening, what is this great pedestrian mall?
Well,
and what's on it?
I'm by no means an an expert on architecture and design, but we are one of the few cities or towns in the country that has successfully kept our pedestrian mall area. Essentially, I believe it was in the 70s, mm-hmm. It became rather popular in urban design to develop these pedestrian areas. So taking formerly paved streets and reverting them back to kind of more of a cultural commons where they were closed to cars and almost a promenade or park-like atmosphere. And so Charlottesville's downtown mall is exactly that and is thriving. It's full of businesses, full of local restaurants, very few chain stores, which I think is a huge thing in its favor as well.
Mm-hmm.
But also just a very lively atmosphere and lots of things going on at any moment, lots of concerts and other arts events and organizations are located down here. PCA has our office on the downtown mall, and so as I'm speaking to you right now, I'm looking out the window at people walking by.
Yes.
Inevitably people, sitting on park benches and playing a harmonica, and it's just, there's such a great sense of community in a place like this that is rare, I think, across the country these days.
And it's vibrant. It's, it's contagious. And it's a magnet. But you're absolutely right. The downtown mall, or the pedestrian mall, I like that, has the Wall of Expression, has Intellos Pavilion, many restaurants, and lots of arts and community activity going on for all ages. I mean, it's a beautiful place. All that you said made me think of something else I wanted to ask you, but it'll come back to me. In any case, I know one of the things that you are involved in your arts education and the entire cultural plan is developing the youth. Now, youth development is a term that gets thrown around a great deal, as is with words like outreach and whatever. But I know that you have some very specific success stories. Talk to us about this arts education and youth development. What are you guys doing?
Sure. Well, it's really interesting. The arts education goal and the cultural plan, we tried to focus on programs both that happen within PCA or that could happen within PCA, but also programs that other people in the community are currently doing and really ways to support them. So some of the recommendations under the arts education goal relate to programs that are in place with the Bridge Progressive Arts Initiative or Second Street Gallery. Through the past few years, I would say 5 or 10 years, PCA and other community partners have really done a lot to work on collaborative arts education efforts with local service organizations. So there are already relatively strong relationships between many arts organizations locally and different service organizations like Boys and Girls Club or Big Brothers Big Sisters. And really the main focus of that goal is to figure out ways to strengthen those relationships, mm-hmm. and do more with them, basically leverage the available resources and manpower that we all have to do more to really reach out to kids who don't have access to those resources otherwise. One of my favorite examples of this is a program that PCA has been working on for the past 5 years now, I believe.
Yeah.
This will be our 6th year, actually. And it's called Storyline. And the Storyline Project is a collaboration between PCA, the Bridge Progressive Arts Initiative, Charlottesville Parks and Rec, local volunteers, and then also the SiteWorks architecture firm, which is located in Charlottesville. And every summer we come together and plan a week-long camp, essentially, for Parks and Rec campers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's usually youth between the ages of roughly 4th through 6th grade.
Mm.
And they come together each day to work with our volunteers and take different adventures, essentially. So sometimes those adventures are walking through the woods on the Ravana Trail. Sometimes it's riding the cat bus. Sometimes it's going to Scottsville and finding out about the ferry. It varies widely depending on the theme of the year. But essentially taking them out into their community and teaching them about what resources are available and a little bit more about the history of where they live.
Yeah.
A lot of these are kids who might live in Southwood or over in West Haven and don't necessarily get out of their specific neighborhood as often as they might like and don't necessarily have the historic perspective to really know Charlottesville and Albemarle that well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we like to open up those doors and really provide them with that insight, but then also encourage them to respond to what they've learned in a creative way. So often we'll have either a watercolor painting session after each day or a sketching or a poetry writing session, and so really encouraging the youth who are participating to activate their creative minds and maybe even learn a new skill by responding to what they learned. And then at the end of the week, everyone comes together and we put all of the creative feedback from the kids that has been kind of collected over the week. We put it all into a collaborative mural that is done in chalk on the chalkboard on the downtown mall.
Yes.
And so at the end of the week, everyone in the community can see kind of what these kids have experienced and what their reactions to it are. And it's always an amazing experience to see these kids, even just over the course of a week, just blossom. And they get really excited about certain aspects. One year we had a theme that was all about water conservation.
Mm.
And they just lit up and suddenly had this real, like, new appreciation for their community. So it's things like that that are kind of thinking outside of the box about arts education that are really impactful.
It's fantastic. Sarah, I know a lot of this just because I do what I do, but I'm so glad to have you on the show so we can share it, because you really have it right at your fingertips and the tip of your tongue and your brain, and you've got it flying, and we get the details and the specifics. It's not, there's a lot going on, but you lay it out for us in a way that we can, I think we really appreciate and can see it. And I want to thank you for that, because that's such an essential part. I mean, I know my friend over at Charlottesville Albemarle Convention and Visitors Bureau, Bree Warner, she works very hard going out of town to convince people to come here for among other things, many things, of course, but as a destination place. And one of them is it's become a hugely popular as a place to have a wedding, to get married. But, you know, there are great hotels, great restaurants, and the fact that there is this tremendous umbrella, artistic umbrella in the PCA is a marvelous thing. Is that what PCA is in your mind, kind of an artistic umbrella over the community that sees itself as, or do others see it as, someone, a resource one can come to for, if not financial resource, then although Give for Good was certainly wow, but I mean as inspiration, as brainstorming, how does PCA work with on a daily basis with other artistic organizations? Because there are quite a few in this city.
There are. We have a shockingly large number of arts organizations for a city and area our size. The last time we counted, it was over 75, which is phenomenal.
Yes.
We're incredibly lucky to have all of them well supported and well attended. But yeah, on a day-to-day basis, PCA really does work as an umbrella organization for the entire arts community. So that means that anytime an arts organization has a question, maybe about grants that would apply to a certain project that they're working on, or potentially about different youth groups that they could work with, or other community groups like the senior center, or, you know, service groups that work with specific populations that might be interested in having arts programming, we consider ourselves the go-to organization to answer those questions. So it can be anything from funding questions to resources, volunteer opportunities for the community. That's a common question that we get, is kind of maybe someone just retired, or someone finds themselves with extra time on their hands and they want to get involved in the arts some way, but they don't necessarily know where to best put their energies.
Mm-hmm.
PCA always has an answer for that, and you know, try to work with the community members to really identify what would be a good fit for them. So, you know, identifying if something along the theatrical lines would be more well suited to the individual than, say, a music volunteer opportunity. And I mean, there are so many opportunities out there.
Mm-hmm.
But we also provide information about local jobs in the arts sector. Kind of what else? There was something while you were talking that I thought of and have not forgotten. Oh, I know. Coming back to the wedding. We have a comprehensive artist directory on our website as well. So anyone who's planning a wedding can go to our website and look at all of the different photographers that live in this area who work and do wedding photography. Similarly, you can see all the musicians that, you know, perform. You can pick on a nice string quartet, or you can find a jazz trio. There's just a wealth of information about all of the local artists of all kinds. And it's so diverse, really, what we have to offer and what the community offers back. And it's really interesting. I recommend that everyone take a look at our website, which is just charlottesvillearts.org. And it will give you kind of the tip of the iceberg about what is available and what kinds of questions we can answer. But then we're also always available for any random other questions that people can come up with. And we'll do our best to help and answer it.
Fantastic. That's a good place to end our first segment. Don't go away. We're going to be back with Sarah Lawson, who is the Executive Director of the Piedmont Council for the Arts, and we have a lot more to talk about. And that was what I had forgotten too, Sarah, weddings. But so we both forgot and both remembered, and good for us. We'll be right back. Stay with us. To the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is the new executive director of the Piedmont Council for the Arts in Charlottesville, Virginia, and Albemarle County, and Central Virginia, and the Mid-Atlantic, and spreading the wings of what is more than history, although beautiful history, but a new history, a growing history, an evolution of all the things that Charlottesville and our surrounding four counties really are. It's wonderful to remember and to have the heritage of Jefferson and Madison and Monroe and eight presidents from Virginia and so forth, and all of those are an amazing piece of the fabric of Charlottesville. But there is more, and more Charlottesville is defining itself as this this broader destination, and justifying and motivating and inspiring people to come here. I came here, and even though I live in Charlottesville 4 days a week, I'm other places a lot, but still, I love when I hit that point on 29 South when suddenly the Blue Ridge Mountains appear and I go, okay, now I know. So anyway, from Blue Ridge Mountains, tell me, what is cultural infrastructure?
So cultural infrastructure is kind of the nuts and bolts of how our arts community works. It's everything from how Piedmont Council for the Arts functions as an independent nonprofit organization, but also the public funding that's available for all of the arts organizations locally, and kind of everything in between. It's staffing, it's manpower, it's funding, it's kind of the behind the scenes, pulling back the curtain, seeing the guts of the community. And it's a really important part to make sure that the arts community and all of the great resources and programs that we have here in Charlottesville and Albemarle, to make sure that they remain sustainable and that we have them for many, many years to come. I'm sure everyone is aware that there's a lot of funding that used to be available for the arts community and is no longer, as free for the taking, shall we say.
Yes.
And this is on a national level, a statewide level, and a local level.
Yes.
And so PCA really wants to work to make sure that, A, the public funding that is available is used responsibly and used well to support the organizations that can really leverage it for greater support and make use of it in a responsible manner. But we also want to make sure that there are private funding resources that are available for the arts community, and also that the arts community, whether it's an individual artist or a nonprofit arts organization, that they know how to access funding that is available and really create a responsible funding structure and strategic plan and development plan for their future. And so a lot of what our professional development revolves around is really teaching those skills to individuals and to people working in organizations to make sure that they're financially viable, essentially.
Gotcha.
But then part of the cultural infrastructure goal of the cultural plan is also working with both the city and the county governments to really, I think the best way to describe it is kind of advise them on how to better structure their funding for arts and culture. Every year there's an annual review cycle where nonprofits can apply for public funding. And often the arts and culture organizations are just kind of they don't fit the structure that's necessarily in place. It's really easy to kind of gauge the effectiveness of a service organization by counting the number of homeless fed or the people clothed or kind of the more defined metrics.
Yes.
Arts and culture, it's more about quality of life. It's more about experience and
yes.
preventative measures. And so taking an elementary school child to a play at the Paramount has worlds of effect on that child
yes.
and has really positive impact on the entire community. But it's a lot different to measure than something else
mm-hmm.
that would be in the service side of things. And so working to try to redefine what that funding structure looks like for arts and culture is a huge priority for PCA.
That's a great priority, and I personally thank you for it, as all should. I'm wondering, do you run into many, because that's like a change of mindset in many places. Maybe that's not quite as true with Charlottesville, since they have so much. But do you find it's a bit of a struggle to change the way people look at the accomplishments of and the contribution of the artists and their organizations?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting conversation. I think that Charlottesville and Albemarle are very unique and very lucky in that there are a lot of individuals who see the value in arts and culture and have, over the past few decades, really made a personal investment in supporting the organizations and the individual artists who live here. And without their support, none of what is currently available in Charlottesville and Albemarle would be here.
Yes.
It's, you know, the passion of our community members and our fellow citizens that really makes all of this possible. And it's an interesting conversation to try to translate that and, to use language that's maybe a bit too strong, but convert the masses to believe in the value of arts and culture is an ongoing discussion. And depending on the audience, I mean, it can range from discussing the economic impact of the art to discussing the education statistics about preventative measures that can be taken with youth. I mean, there are so many different kinds of impact that the arts make that each conversation about their value and their impact can be different. But the main thing that we're trying to communicate is that to anyone who is interested, it is of value and there is a significant amount of investment that helps make all this possible, but no one can possibly ever contribute too much. There's never going to be kind of a surplus of support for the arts. We can always do more with it and make this community a better place with further support.
Well, it's certainly an ongoing battle to define and justify even the arts to some people, and very often, I mean, there are angels everywhere who write big checks in big, like I'm from New York, that was always easy, and it's certainly nothing is as easy as it used to be, but in smaller cities and counties and where arts have not necessarily been a major focus, it's an ongoing battle, and you certainly sound like you are ready for it, because just convincing people to see artists, as I had a guest the other day who's a police lieutenant, and he surprised me, because while he was very conservative in his views about a lot of things, he was very upset that the sports get much more financial support than education and the arts. And it was a fascinating conversation. Of course, I just let him go on and on and say that. It was really quite something. And on one other personal note on this kind of subject, on this very subject, actually, I have a friend of goodness, over 30, 35 years now, I guess, and he was the conductor, I believe, of the Charlottesville Oratorial Society, if that's what it's called, before I moved here, actually. But the point is, we've known each other for quite a while, and he and I have had our fair share of when are you going to get a real job? My mother never stopped saying that until she saw me on national television. But the point is, we see now so many people who who spent their lives working so hard at what they do, and of course artists always struggle. But as I said to my friend, I think that in these challenging times, artists are used to the freelance life, are used to every interview, every job is an interview for the next job, because there's not always a permanency. It is, okay, a gig, if you will, or whatever, if they're not fortunate enough to find something that is ongoing. But I think it's a time for the artist and the entrepreneur to say, okay, we have these challenging financial times. Now, here's what we're going to do. And I think PCA is a large part of the answer to that. And I'm just wondering, it seems like with so much, especially with this Charlottesville Albemarle culture that you've been discussing with me, what kind of staff do you have there? How many people are there on a regular basis to help you with this cultural plan?
That's an excellent question. So you talk about resilience of the arts community and kind of the, resilience of the people who work within it. And I think PCA is a great example of that. For an organization that does as much as we do, I think that we leverage our resources incredibly effectively. Our staff is actually made up of 3 part-time people, including myself.
Mm.
And so if you look at kind of the full-time equivalent, we basically equal about 1.5 full-time employees.
Wow.
And so on any given day, there's usually about 2 of us in the office. Our schedules overlap a fair amount, but none of us are full-time and none of us really have the full-time commitment. However, we spend so much extra time working for the goals and the mission of PCA, even if we're not in the office, even if we're not kind of quote-unquote on the clock. This is our passion, and
yes,
for all 3 of us, this is a meaningful place to work and a meaningful mission to be working towards, and so the arts community is our home, basically. I know,
mm-hmm,
personally, I've been involved in the Charlottesville arts community basically for the past 10 years,
mm-hmm,
and I love all of the people that I work with, and I love coming to work every day. It is definitely an act of passion and a job that I feel really benefits those around me, but has created such great opportunities for personal growth as well, that even though we are working beyond our internal capacity, we do a lot, and I think that we maintain the interest and the passion behind it. But that being said, PCA's own infrastructure is one of the goals of the cultural plan. Essentially, through the feedback of the people who were involved in the planning process, we heard that people really appreciate the services and the programs offered by PCA, and that they wish that there were more.
Yes.
And the only way that we can really do more is if we do have that increase in staff and have the ability to improve really just even the number of hours that staff is available to do programs.
Yes.
Very simple things like that. A great example is we actually just received a grant for new computers. And up until last week, we've been using computers that were from, I believe, 2006.
Oh, wow.
And so even just simple things like increasing our technology and updating things really provide such a groundswell of ability and kind of a huge investment in our efficiency. So we're a growing organization, and it's kind of funny thinking back to the recession. We actually had some of our largest growth jumps during the recession.
Yes.
Against all odds.
Yes.
As recently as, 2008, we had, I believe, 1 staff member.
Uh-huh.
By 2010, we'd bumped that up to 2 part-time staff members, but it was only about a year or two ago that we had 3 part-time staff members, so all of this is relatively new,
mm-hmm,
and we're happy to be able to provide jobs for community members who are invested in the arts but would love to be able to do more.
Well, I certainly don't wish recession on anyone, and I love hearing you speak of it in the past tense. In the recession. But I have to say that also Americans in general, but certainly artists, the creative people, because that's what they have to do every day, whether recession or not, certainly know how to take the ashes and make gold out of it. And you may be a part-time paycheck, but you are a full-time committed person. I can hear that, and all of you are, because I see the results of your work. And talking to people, even during, I may have already mentioned the Tom Tom Festival, in attending that and a couple of the things involved and the people I know involved in it, everyone spoke extremely highly of you. And by the way, on one event in particular and I want to talk about this because it's a good segue to your activities, your art drinks at the Bon Café in Charlottesville, there was an event there during the Tom Tom that was put on by Cypher, I believe they call themselves. It's a Bernard Hankins and Daniel Garner, and they do this very interesting thing. It's not the first time I've attended, and they pass out playing cards, and depending on, and the fun thing about this, one of the best things about this, is that they have a group of artists, but they also have community leaders and business leaders and people who ordinarily don't bump into each other in the normal course of their personal or professional life. They put them all in the same room, and when you get a playing card, if you have an ace, or or a two, you are with other people who have a two or an ace or whatever. So you are talking to people at random. You're thrown together, but given a topic. But the point I want to make so that I can ask you about art drinks is that when everyone, all of us, were asked in separate groups in discussion and then to give our collective response, what would you like to see happen? The overwhelming response was a connection, more of a connection and a cooperation between the business community, education institutions, and the arts community. And Bernard Hankins and others said, and one of the first places to start is for us to form, as this group of people there, some kind of small half a dozen people and go to PCA and talk about how we can help them help all of us. So just so you know, you are definitely on the radar and in a very positive way. But before, go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, and I actually have had follow-up conversations with most of the people who were there, and it is such a wonderful chance to get to talk to the community. I feel like we are connected in many ways to many of the community leaders, both within the arts and without, but also many of the local residents who have an interest in the arts. But there are always amazing other people who we encounter on a daily basis who PCA has never had any interaction with, and it's so wonderful to get their input and their feedback about what they think they see as priorities and what they think would be a welcome addition. And I fully support the TomTom Festival's efforts in that regard as well. I was actually personally disappointed to have to miss that session, but I heard that it was a very positive experience for everyone.
It was amazing. Okay, on to art drinks. Tell us about art drinks.
So Art Drinks is actually essentially the same idea. Art Drinks is a program that PCA has been running for the past 6 or 7 years now. And basically it's a way to work with the local business community to kind of support them and really provide an incentive for people to come visit local restaurants and kind of watering holes, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so we hold the event at a rotating location. Every 3 months we change locations. And it's always a local restaurant that kind of houses the event. And what the event is kind of similar to what you just mentioned, which
mm-hmm.
is basically we invite the community in, and it can be anyone who is actively involved in the arts or just anyone who's even interested in learning more about what the arts means for Charlottesville and Albemarle. And they come, and it's just kind of a casual networking event.
Uh-huh.
2 hours long. It happens once a month. And we really encourage people to just talk about the projects that they're working on, the projects that they're interested in, what skills they're bringing or questions they might have. And every month, it's a different group of people. Based on interest, there's always a rotation that kind of happens where sometimes people are busy, but they'll come the next month, and then there's always new people who have maybe moved to the area or have just found out about PCA. And so we always have somewhere between probably 50 to 100 people at each event, and there's just amazing conversations that come out of it and really productive work often as well. It also provides local arts organizations with a chance to promote any events that they have coming up, and we have a section of time devoted to announcements for that. And it's just really fun. It's a great way to meet new people and get more involved and make those connections while also benefiting local businesses as well. So
excellent. We're about to run out of time, but I wanted to make certain you have an opportunity. First of all, you've talked about jobs possibilities, placement, or is there a newsletter? Certainly give us your website again, and let us know how we can be in touch with you and the organization. Go ahead.
Yeah, so if you're interested in learning more about PCA, the first thing you can do is come to Art Drinks. So Art Drinks takes place on the second Wednesday of every month. Depending on which month it is, it will be at a different location. The summer location for Art Drinks will be Crozet Pizza on the corner.
Uh-huh.
So it's over at the former location of Buddhist Biker Bar. Second Wednesday of every month from 5:30 to 7:30, you can always check the PCA website to find out which location we're at currently. But anyone's free to come. It's totally free of charge, and you're welcome to purchase drinks or food while you're there to support the local business, but there's no obligation to. And it's always a good time. To find out additional information, you can visit our website, which is www.charlottesvillearts.org. All of that's spelled out. But you can also always feel free to stop by the PCA office. We're located on the downtown mall in the City Space building, which is right by the Margaret Street parking garage. Or you can call us at 434-971-2787 or email us at info@charlottesvillearts.org.
All right. Well, Sarah, you know, I've loved this because when I love it when you have a guest who can ask a question and they've got the answer and the particulars, the specifics. They know they've got a real expert in you, and I greatly appreciate your being on the show, and I look forward to many more conversations with you.
Well, thank you for having me. I look forward to talking with you again soon.
You got it. All the best to you and PCA, by the way, and everybody there.
Thanks.
Bye now.
Bye.
Now stay with us, everyone. Although we're saying goodbye to Sarah Lawson, we'll be right back with more discussion from our panel and maybe some commentary. Stay with us and visit the Reasonable Boys Facebook page and like us.
Welcome, everyone, back to The Reasonable Voice. Today on our panel, we have Michelle Opperman, Bernard Hankins, Marcella Rolando, and Daniel L. Garner. And today we're going to be talking about the importance of the creative mind. Also, when we talk about creativity, we limit to the sphere of arts, like painting and dancing. But creativity is a way of life, of which very much has a gigantic impact on everything from society to business. And Mr. Hankins, how do you think that the arts and business can coalesce to the benefit of all of us?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because I was actually thinking about that on the way over. And there's always this marriage kind of friction between art and business in our culture.
Yeah.
And I think what it is that the business people, I think they see creative people and it's like, oh, you guys are so flaky and you're just going to want to create all day and you just have endless ideas and you're never going to do anything. And their response is, you need to get organized, you need to get structured, you need to get some control about yourself. And what I'm saying is like, no, you guys are the structure.
Mm-hmm.
The business people are the structure. You bring that to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And if the creative people saw opportunities in which their art would be contained and their ideas would be contained, they would say, oh, here's a goal, here's a purpose, here's something to work towards that I know is going to reap something and is going to benefit everybody. They would then put themselves in that container, but creative people are not organized by default. That's why they don't do a good job of running organizations. Not all creative people, but in general, the creative mind wants to create, and that's what they're good at doing, but the problem is, since the economy is not there to support them, they end off on the side trying to create and seeming to go nowhere, but it's not because they don't have drive or motivation, it's because they're saying, we need support. We need help. We have the ideas, but the business people are like, well, we want to see evidence first before we support. And the creative people are like, you guys got a lot of money. Like, just put some in here first and let us create. And then, you know, and there's going to be, it's like business people. They say, you're going to fail in business, but it's not okay to fail in creativity for some reason.
Well, I don't know. To me, I mean, that's an excellent point. And why, since all business is based on someone's idea, someone's invention, someone's creation, someone trying to figure out a puzzle and putting it together. That's what artists do all the time. So when we say creative persons, we're not just talking about artists, of course, but you know, artists have to do that. Writers, poets, composers, actors, they all have to, a painter, if there's an idea in their head that they then can put on a flat surface, a canvas or something. So if you channel that, as you say, Bernard, if the two disciplines, which are really cannot possibly be as successful separate from one another as they could be together, it would seem to me it's not just a win-win. That's too casual a way to put it. It's a necessity. It's a joint venture that needs to happen. So what do we do about
just
that?
A quick follow. I mean, to me, I'm always amazed that I see people who, like, I just wish we had some ideas, some creativity.
Yeah.
I'm like, you have artists over here spewing, overflowing with ideas, and they're waiting to be contained in some environment.
And they look at things differently than you do, which is exactly what you need. I wonder why it hasn't occurred to the business community to, I mean, you go to advertising companies for creative ideas to promote your product. I don't know.
I think people are coming around. You see things like the Doritos contest, people to make commercials. Like, they got it now. They're like, oh, we've got all this free labor and free ideas, and we can just pay them if the product is good.
Sounds like an artist.
Sounds like people are catching on that the creativity is not within the four walls of our marketing firm, but it's actually out there where the people are.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people associate creativity with fun, and fun equals flaky. And also business person says, well, I'm not going to work and you get to have all the fun. You're going to work too, because creativity equals entertainment and art equals pastime. So if you're talking about wanting to concentrate on the art, you're saying I want to play all day in their mind, so they don't want to support that because they want you to work and suffer too. I think to that, that's part of it. I think too... ironically, like you were saying, Bernard, when you want to organize environments, so much, Daniel Goldman has this great new book called Focus, where he talks about how a lot of creativity is a consequence of being in these kind of chaotic environments, that then you look for patterns, instructions, you bring them together and create something new out of it. In the very act of creating an organized environment so that you then put the creative person in, you thus rob them of really a lot of what makes them creative. And so the businessman's like, okay, well, once you get organized, then you can be creative. Well, then you're not creative, so they say, well, I gave you a chance and you weren't creative, so I'm never going to give artists money again. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. I think, too, lastly, because of the internet, because of so much information, what's starting to happen is a lot more people are starting to be creative, because you have to start figuring out how to find patterns and how to comprehend all the information, unless you just become apathetic to it all. So then you do have these Doritos contests. You have companies like Google. You have a lot of entrepreneurship is arising up. Now, I'm still afraid that a lot of this entrepreneurial activity that's occurring is a reaction against a bad job market versus a transformation in our way of thinking, which is what we need. We need an essential transformation, not just a reactionary change, but at least it's a step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think another thing that's made me think about is how... I was watching some tutorials on sales today, and I think it's interesting because the salesman or the businessman, he's creative too, you know. Mm-hmm. But what's the big difference between the artist and the businessman is motivation. It's like what is the goal here? And I think what I saw a lot in this because it's essentially acting when you mm-hmm. are doing sales. Mm-hmm. It's an act, mm-hmm. and you are really you are going to be persistent and you are going to put on a show and tell a story, and that sounds so similar to an actor. Mm-hmm. And that's an artist, as a performer. But I think what's so interesting is that there's this very market-minded, the businessman is going to essentially repeat his, his pyramid, mm-hmm. Of closing until it works. It's mm-hmm. Never leave with a no. Yeah. The artist, I think, on the other hand, is more interested in, creating, because this is the thing, salesperson walks in, something that, people who teach on sales will say is they just want to get rid of you, mm-hmm. okay? But, when somebody's playing music, you don't want them to, you don't want to get rid of them, unless you, hate music, but who hates music? Everybody loves music. Everybody loves, beautiful things. Everybody loves to see a good movie. Everybody loves to see a beautiful performance, a dance. And so that's something that you don't want to say no to. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because they both, offer something. The businessman is going to be persistent. The artist is going to make things that people actually want. Mm-hmm. A store owner doesn't want people coming in and asking them, do you want to buy this or that? So there's this interesting, they could actually work really well, together. The other thing I was going to say is that both the businessman and the artist are disciplined. Mm. The businessman is disciplined and he has a lot of hard work to do, but the artist has a lot of hard work to do. And I think that the mark of a good artist is one who persists and works on their trade every day, no matter what. So I think there's, what I wanted to say mainly is that they're both creative, they're both disciplined, and I think we don't, it's a sad thing to think of that they're so far apart, but it's motivation ultimately that usually is their difference. Mm.
So me, Michelle, and Dana, we have a company called Cypher. And so what Cypher does is we try to bring all of these elements together. So, for instance, we did something called Pitchcraft. I'm glad Michelle said acting. So we took myself as a poet, mm-hmm. an actress, and a comedian, and an entrepreneur, and we had all of them have 10 minutes each to talk about how do I captivate an audience. Mm-hmm. Because if you're giving a pitch to a guy who you want money from, and you're just giving him the facts, sure, he wants to hear that because he wants to know how am I going to make my money back. Mm-hmm. But if I come in there and I have the facts and I can say something about your granddaughter, mm-hmm. and now I'm hitting that emotional note, and he's like, oh, makes me think of my granddaughter. Mm-hmm. I'm capturing both parts of you. Mm-hmm. So I have much more of a likelihood of sealing the deal, mm-hmm. because I'm communicating with the full human being. So we're trying to do things like that. We also had an event recently at a Tom Tom Festival where we took an actress – a designer and a doctor, and we had them all talk about empathy. Mm-hmm. And so, because to me, it was interesting to hear the doctor. She was saying, oh, people don't know, we role play all the time. Mm-hmm. We have to sit down with our doctor friends, and we have to go through a script over and over and over. We have to rehearse these lines. We have to talk to a patient this way. We have to get up on stage, and we have to rehearse in front of an auditorium full of our peers. How empathetic did I appear to that, you know, that patient? So to me, it's extremely important for all of these things to come together, because you're dealing with whole human beings. You're not just talking to the business part of Marcella. If I'm trying to sell you a vacuum, what do? I use an emotional appeal. Mm-hmm. Don't you like coming home to a clean house?
Yes.
Don't you like coming home and
orderly and fresh smelling?
I don't start talking about the. I don't start saying, well, this picks up, you know, the dirt at five, you know, this velocity rate. That doesn't appeal to you. I talk to the part of you that I know wants to go. Ah.
That's true. And you know, and another thing, all of you are making me think of. Years ago when I first went to New York, everything was fine. Then it wasn't fine. I didn't know what to do. I came back to Maryland and found the richest actor I knew. He had a big house, beautiful home, a Mercedes and a Porsche. I said, David, what do you do for a living? He says, well, I sell real estate, and I'd love to have you as one of my real estate people. He was the broker. And I go to the school, you know, the class. I attend a math tutor, because what do I know about math? And I end up back in the office. You know, now I'm a real estate agent, and all the real estate salespeople are telling me, well, you know, it's going to be 6 months before you sell a house. So I go right into Manager David's office, and I say, what on earth am I going to do? You said I was going to make a lot of money so I can go back to New York and be an actor. And David said, don't listen to those salespeople. You are an actor. And do you know what actors do that salespeople don't? They listen. I had directed David in a show, and he remembered that, my saying that. And I say it to actors all the time. The most important thing about acting is listening. So I think the creative person does bring emotional empathy, but they also bring the art of listening to what the customer, the client, the patient wants and needs. An audience, because they are our audience. We want to know what they need. What's going to make them laugh? What's going to make them cry? What's going to make them applaud? What's going to make them go out and talk about it and bring their friends back? Mm-hmm. That's something the artist brings.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, it's strange with artists. We either look at them as impractical or deities. I mean, they're in Hollywood or they're no one.
Yeah.
We're very extreme in our thinking, which is very strange, because it's not so much artists we care about, but celebrities, which is, I think, an important distinction. We think because we go to the movies, we care about the arts. No, we care about celebrities, and we care about being entertained. I think a Renaissance culture is one in which the arts is very much integrated into the human experience versus the I'm off of work and I don't want to think about it anymore experience. I think too often when people hear artists, they think guy with guitar at open mic. Their scope of art is very limited. And also then you see the thing about a lot of people, not everyone who plays a guitar, I'm not saying it's a guitar is not a bad thing at all, but it's something that you know is kind of it's something that can be more of a pastime that people like listening to guitars. It has that sort of appeal of sitting on the lawn next to a tree and the girl with blonde hair comes up as you play the guitar. That's fine, but when that's your scope of what an artist is, then it doesn't go into this kind of entire way of thinking. It also makes art a means to an end rather than an end of itself, because it's like, oh, people are looking at me and applauding versus this was an excellent performance. Now that said, there are extraordinary guitarists who do extraordinary work. And likewise, there are people who play piano and do acting and paint just so they can tell people they do these things. But if that is what we're so used to, it's hard for us to think of creativity as essential. And I think the other thing I'm a little worried about in our current kind of change in the direction of entrepreneurship, and there is some talk about creativity, is that then people are starting to go, well, let's add some creative people on our panel so we can have diversity. Mm-hmm. Where then it's just matching a quota in the same way we say, oh, we need to have a woman, an Asian, an African American on our panel or our business so that we can then kind of say we've got our quota. Well, if that's still our way of thinking, then creativity is just going to be that thing we add so we can say we've added it versus this entire mode in which we engage with the world and thus make it a new and more beautiful place.
Which is the reason that Google has this new product called Helpouts, where you can create a teaching, a seminar, and you can charge per hour, per minute, and people find you, and they sign up, and then they do it online through your laptop. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing one which is public speaking from the perspective of a spoken word poet.
Uh-huh.
And to me, that's kind of the heart of what I'm getting at, is because I get on the stage all the time, and I feel very comfortable. You put me in a social situation, no, I don't like to talk to people, but for whatever reason, I get on the stage, and I come alive, I'm transformed. And I know there's people who may be very good at business and pitching, but then you put them on stage, and they're, like, terrified. So why wouldn't they come to me, who does it naturally, to get help, or even have me do it for you? You know, why? If you don't like pitching your product, fine. Get an actor, get a performer to do it. Who cares as long as you seal the deal? The guy's not going to be like, well, you didn't pitch the product yourself. Did the idea come across clearly? Is it going to make money? That is the end goal. So why is it that we're, like, resisting one another? And I don't think the artists, well, the artists do have their, they resist business in certain ways, too. Like, oh, I don't want to sell out. I don't want to be a part of commercial stuff ever. But I think the artist is probably a little more willing than the business person to come over, because the artist is like, hey, I have these gifts to give. I really want to do something. When the business guy is more like, I haven't seen that proven yet, so I don't really want to take a risk on it. Where the artist is usually about taking risks all the time, because they're always trying to discover and explore and experiment.
That reminds me with a, not that it's a funny thing, it isn't, but when the recession hit us and everyone was talking about the losing of jobs and whatever, I had a conversation with my friend of 30 years, and we realized, we didn't even think about it until we talked, that the reason it's not hitting us as much is because we've always been in the arts. It's never been 9 to 5. We were always, while you were doing the show, or in his case, the church music, you were working toward the next job, because when this time, when this job was over, and it was a shorter period of time than 30 years of 9 to 5, you had to, you know, get out there and get the next job. So I guess we were sort of used to this kind of uncertainty. Not that I'm wishing it on anyone, including myself. But I do think a marriage, I do think we have, the time has come for America to accept a transformation, not just in what we're talking about in this panel, but in other panels that we've discussed. It's time to look, because it is possible. I really do think this, and I'm not saying this because I want it to happen or that because it's the worst thing that could happen. It is possible, with the rate at which we are using the rainforest and energy resources and electricity, et cetera, that we may find ourselves back in a time of my grandmama, and although my grandmama had a nice car, but, you know, but I mean needing the horsepower, literally horsepower, and lamps and candles, because it's not... we tend to think, you know, the light switch, you click it on, you turn on the AC, and it's always there. That isn't even the case in this country. But when we don't stop to think about, everyone's draining what Mother Earth has to give, and if it one day doesn't have any more to give, then are we just, that's it? We just sit around and go, where's my air conditioner? I mean, we have to be willing to face that there's a transformation coming. It can be our choice. We can go after climate change. We can rethink. Or it can be nature's choice. But I think we need to... How do we get on that? Michelle. It's Michelle's fault.
It's my fault. It's always my fault.
Yeah.
I think that makes... That's really interesting. It makes me think about how, like, you know, before, if you had a horse, that was, like, a really valuable thing.
Oh, yeah.
It was a really
valuable
thing.
A horse thief would get hanged.
Yeah, and I mean, now it's, like, it's interesting today how we value money more than things that are valuable. You know what I mean? It's, like, we forget that, like, there are things that innately have a value. Mm-hmm. But because we've become so, like, almost beyond, you know, the simple things, if you will, you know, it's almost as if it doesn't necessarily matter that you can do this thing, because if you're not able to make it a big thing and you know, be able to make it profitable to, you know, in a way that's noticeable, I guess, then it's like it doesn't matter. But it does have value.
Yeah.
It still has value. And heck, if we are, you know, back to horsepower, literally, it would have one of the most value of all.
Yeah.
It's like having, like, hand skills. And, you know, I mean, I think everything you can do is valuable, but it's just, and can be used positively. But I think there's we somehow have, like, we forget to justify things and see things as valuable in and of themselves. Mm-hmm. And we often use, like the guy we talk a lot about the economy, but, like, the economy sometimes is, it infiltrates our thoughts about, you know, like ourselves. Like, you know, if somebody gets an education at the public library, it can be looked at as not a real education versus somebody who went to Columbia. And there's reasons for that, and Columbia is a great school. But, you know, it's interesting how we validate things. And it's almost like we've abstracted things and we're kind of stuck there. And that can be to our own detriment. But anyways, Bernard, you're going.
Yeah, last thing before we go, I think, I can't remember exactly how Daniel said, but I thought it was a great quote he came up with, which is, you know, the artist is kind of punished for not being scientific, but yet the scientist is praised for being creative.
Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, but you, like, you know, would you get to tie together what you guys are saying, you know, when you see GE and their logo is the light bulb, like, there's a sense that, like, oh, yeah, innovation, creativity, thinking outside of the box is something to be praised when it has an end goal of making a light bulb. Or, you know, when the presidents talk about, oh, we need more innovation, it's always scientific-related only.
Yes.
If we can get some new piece of medical technology, some kind of product out of it, then it's creative. But other types of creativity, well, that's like Daniel said, that's for when you're doing an open mic and you want to sit in the field and play, you know, the guitar. But yeah, if anybody's interested, you know, Cypher, C-Y-P-H-E-R, cypherideas.com. You can find out about Pitchcraft and other things we're doing. And if you want to check out Bernard Hankins on Google Helpouts, you can look me up.
Yes.
Shameless self-promotion, and it's great and, and worthy, and we should, yes. And Tom, Bernard was very much involved, as was Daniel, with TomTom Founders Festival here in Charlottesville, Virginia, and it was a great success. And there was all the rippling effects of try and doing with this creative mixer they put together. I was there. I mean, they had business people, community people, artistic people. Who else am I missing? We're all in the same room, and when they were asked, because Bernard forced us to talk to one another, when we were asked how to what we thought was needed to accomplish this, that, and the other thing for the society, both in the city level, the county, and the state, everybody was saying the same thing, even though they may have said it a little differently. It all was the same thing, and it was about that unity. It just was a great experience. So there it is.
Well, I think that was a fantastic discussion, and I think a creative society is a society that can see the value in the world around it, them, and the people around it, in the people around them. So hopefully we can get a little more creativity in our world so that we can have a little more sense of what really truly matters.
Bravo.
It's been a discussion of The Reasonable Voice. Thank you for tuning in. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you for continuing to listen, support, and share The Reasonable Voice with your friends. We are now accepting offers for your company or organization to advertise with us, and welcome new sponsors for The Reasonable Voice. To apply, please email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com.
Thank you for joining us today and every day, and recommending us to all your friends, both online and offline. And please download our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.